Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The presidential election is just about 4 weeks away, and we continue to hear how tight the results will be. Will Kamala Harris or Donald Trump win? But according to the New York Times national polling average, Harris is winning easily with 49% of the vote and Trump has 46%. The problem is that's the national vote average. It's not breaking down the swing states that will decide who wins the Electoral College. And we know you can win the national popular vote and still lose the Electoral College and thus lose the presidency. So what's going on with that? How is that a democracy? Ari Berman has written a book about this and other anti-democracy features in the American system of government, minority rule, the right-wing attack on the will of the people, and the fight to resist it. And Ari Berman, welcome back to The Source.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, so Tim Walz, the Democrat vice presidential nominee, on Tuesday, he called to abolish the Electoral College, and that apparently caused some waves. That people were like, what? How could anyone say something like this? Even the Harris campaign ended up walking that back, saying this is not Kamala Harris's position, although she had signaled in the past that she was open to this. So how is abolishment or reform of the Electoral College a hot button issue?
Well, it is pretty crazy that this was written off as just another gaffe by Tim Walz. The Harris campaign, as you said, distanced themselves from the remark. The New York Times said Walz was rocking the boat, quote unquote, for Harris. And instead of having a substantive discussion about why we elect presidents the way we elect them, it was just kind of swept under the rug. And I think it's a conversation we should be having right now, because the fact is the U.S. is the only major democracy where you can win the popular vote but lose the Electoral College. It's the only major democracy for that standpoint that has an Electoral College at all. And we're once again talking about an election that's going to be decided by seven swing states that represent 15% of the population, meaning that 85% of the country doesn't have a meaningful vote for president. I know Texas is closer than it has been and maybe in years past, but the fact is we know Donald Trump's going to win Texas. So if you're a Democrat in Texas or you're a Republican in California or New York, your vote doesn't really matter in presidential elections. And I think it's just it's an undemocratic system, first and foremost, in that it's the only way, the only election in America that has a situation where you can get fewer votes but actually win the presidency is how we elect presidents. We don't elect senators or House members or city council members or mayors or anyone else through that kind of system. And then it also shuts out the vast majority of Americans from deciding who the president could be. And it has a deeply destabilizing impact on our political system.
The number to call in, if you got a question and comment, do you think the Electoral College should be dumped or should we hang on to it? Well, call in. Let us know what you're thinking is. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you see other features in the democratic system that we have in the United States that favors minority rule, like to hear about that as well. So when I was writing this and getting ready for the program, I wrote it as, are there glitches in the system and that allow minority rule? And it said, well, these are not glitches. I mean, this is the system that as it was designed, right?
In some ways. I mean, it was designed in such a way where the founding fathers really didn't trust the people to directly pick the president. They thought it would be dominated by large states, or they thought the public was too uninformed or the country was too big for people to make a rational decision. That said, there were some dissenters to that. James Madison, who was the most prominent founding father of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, said that he actually favored the people choosing the president. But he was from Virginia, which was a slave state. And he openly said that he worried that under a direct popular election, the slave states would have less power because the free states obviously had more people that were eligible to vote. And so Madison basically said, I'm for a direct election of the president, except for slavery. So, I mean, the roots of the Electoral College go back to restricting Democratic participation more broadly, but also very specifically to institutions like slavery that have a very dark history in our country's past. And there were some very powerful minority factions at the Constitutional Convention, not just the slave states, but also the small states that wanted to preserve their influence. They felt like a direct popular election might threaten that, but they knew that in the Electoral College, representation would be based not just on the total population of a state, but on representation in the House and the Senate. Well, in the House, slave states had more power because of the three-fifths clause, and in the Senate, small states had more power because each state got the same number of senators regardless of population. That meant that both slave states and small states had more power in the Electoral College. And even though the Electoral College in some ways has become reformed, because back then, basically states just appointed electors and the electors selected the president. So there really wasn't any purpose in having a national election. Now we have national elections and the electors by and large follow the will of the people, but the Electoral College is still biased towards some of the same minority factions that it favored at the country's founding.
But are they really following the will of the people if the popular vote can go one way and the Electoral College can go another way?
And what I meant is they're following the will of their state's voters. They follow the will of the state's voters. But I'm saying back in 1787, they didn't even do that. So that part of it has been reformed. But no, it doesn't follow the will of the voters. It basically sets up this ticking time bomb every 4 years in which you can win the popular vote but lose the Electoral College, or vice versa, lose the popular vote and win the Electoral College. And that's a deeply destabilizing thing for democracy. It calls into question the basic legitimacy of our system. And it violates notions of one person, one vote, because if we had the system for the House or the Senate or other races, it would most likely be held to be unconstitutional. But somehow we have an exception for the most important office in our land, that it can be conducted in a way that's radically at odds with how we hold any other election in our country.
And mathematically, it's possible that you can win the 270 votes you need to win the Electoral College with just 22% of the popular vote. That means if you pick the right states, you win with just enough, because it's winner take all. You can do that, become president with just 22% of the will of the people. That's messed up.
And that winner take all part is also really important, because
we can talk about that. I got to go to this break. We're going to talk about if that's a solution, if repealing the winner take all part of that. And that's something we could also blame Thomas Jefferson for. But we're going to talk more about that. Our phone lines are open. Are you concerned about the Electoral College in this presidential election? Do you think this should be the will of the people? How do you see this working? Is this good for America? Is it good for you? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this one-minute break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Ari Berman. He is the National Voting Rights Correspondent for Mother Jones. He's the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, Herding Donkeys, the Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, and Minority Rule. That's his latest book, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. And we're talking about the Electoral College right now and about how that seems to be standing in the way of having popular sovereignty in the United States, where the will of the people picks the president. So in your book, Ari, you say that this is a right-wing attack on the will of the people, minority rule. So we're hearing that, you know, Kamala Harris has to win by additional percentage points in order to win the Electoral College, 3-4, something like that. And that's kind of where she is now. It's still kind of iffy. We also hear the same thing about Congress, that Congress needs to be have much more support in order for the Democrats to win the control of the Congress. And in the Senate, you know, there many of the low population states are Republican states, and so there is a minority favor there as well. And then the senators pick basically have a lot to do with who gets to be a Supreme Court justice, and we see minority rule being reflected on who's on the Supreme Court. So it sounds like what's going on here, Ari?
Well, it just goes to show you that there's a lot of ways to thwart the will of the majority built into our electoral system. It starts with the fact of the Electoral College and the fact that you can get more votes but not actually be elected president. But it continues with other institutions. The House is skewed in a lot of states, like in Texas, by gerrymandering. There was just a study by the Brennan Center for Justice that found that Republicans control 16 more House seats than Democrats by virtue of gerrymandering, because they were more aggressive in the states they controlled, like Texas, in drawing the maps, by and large. Then you look at the Senate. Because each state gets the same level of senators, the same number of senators, regardless of population, that gives small rural states much more power than larger and more urban states, whether it's New York or California or even a red state like Texas. And the Senate maps largely need to be determined by those places. Right now, the state that is likely to give Republicans a majority in the Senate is Montana, one of the smallest and whitest states in the country. So in all these ways, you have minority rule shaping national politics. And of course, the Supreme Court is a product of presidents who lost the popular vote and senators who were not elected with majority support. So 5 of 6 conservative justices on the Supreme Court were appointed by Republican presidents who initially lost the popular vote and were confirmed by senators who are elected with a minority of Americans. And then, of course, those institutions make the Democratic divide deeper by doing things like gutting the Voting Rights Act and overturning Roe v. Wade and saying that the president has the power of kings and all of those things that the Supreme Court has done in the past decade.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Nikki on the line. Nikki, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. My comment is in response to the effect of the Electoral College. I do believe that unpopulated areas need to have a voice, and I think the Electoral College does that effectively. And I think even though, as you just said, the Senate, you know, they get two senators regardless of the population in the legislature, but that has nothing to do with the executive. And I do believe that it's important, and it's important to be maintained.
All right, Nikki, thank you for bringing up that point. I appreciate that. That's a good point. So, Ari, the concern that some people have had, like Nikki, saying if you take out the Electoral College, we're going to do a popular vote, then you only have to campaign in the big urban areas and forget about the rural areas. So that's not good either.
No, but I don't think that's actually what would happen, because right now presidential candidates only are campaigning in 7 states, meaning that 43 states are shut out. I think if there was a direct popular election, you would see, for example, Donald Trump campaigning much more in New York and California, where there's a lot of Republicans, and Kamala Harris spending a lot more time campaigning in Texas, where there's a lot of Democrats who don't really matter in a presidential election. So I think a lot more of the country would actually be represented. The fact is, if you're a Republican in a rural state like Wyoming, no one's going to campaign for you because you're just a classically red state. So I think the problem with the Electoral College is not that it would somehow favor rural voters and hurt urban voters or vice versa. The problem is that it shuts out 85% of Americans from actually mattering in a presidential election. And I think that's why it's so unpopular. If you look at polls, majorities of all different people oppose the Electoral College because a lot of Republicans realize that their votes and voices don't matter under it either. And so it's really something that only benefits the small number of swing states and hurts everyone else, whether they're solidly red states or solidly blue states.
Right. So when I hear progressives make this argument, they will point to, you know, North and South Dakota and, you know, Montana, places like that, low population states. We don't really talk about, though, you know, Rhode Island, Delaware, you know, Vermont, small blue states. And they're also getting two senators. I mean, how is that?
Yeah, exactly. It's not an entirely red state problem, though it is true that if you look at the largest states in the country versus the smallest states in the country, there are more Republicans representing the smallest states and more Democrats representing the larger states. Though there's certainly large states like Texas, like Florida, that have Republican senators and that are controlled by Republicans. So there's nothing inherently Democratic or Republican about the large states. My biggest problem with the Electoral College and also how we do representation in the Senate is it feels like it's penalizing people for choosing to live in the largest population centers in the country and the most dynamic places in the country. And it's almost rewarding people from living in the most sparsely populated areas as opposed to rewarding the states where people choose to live, whether it's Texas or California or New York or Florida. And I think that our system should give the greatest weight to the places with the greatest number of people. That doesn't mean that they'll control the smaller states, but it means that right now you have a situation where in many cases, the minority is controlling the majority. And that was a fear that was expressed by a number of the founders. For example, James Madison said that he believed that the Senate should be based on proportional representation because he did not want a situation in which the smaller states would be able to join together and thwart the power of the larger states if indeed a majority of Americans live there. So in many ways, a lot of the founders foresaw this problem in 1787. The problem was that the small states basically said, if you don't give us the same level of representation, we're going to leave the Union. So they were forced into agreeing to equal representation in the Senate. It wasn't a compromise so much as it was just an outright concession.
Well, let me ask you this real quickly. We're almost out of time in this segment, but real quick. So is it possible to require states, because states are supposed to make their own election laws, to do what Maine and Nebraska do when they divide up their electoral votes?
Yes, states can decide how they allocate their electoral college votes.
Yeah. So how do you maintain? Can they do that in a federal law? Say you have to do it this way or the other way, or they have no control over that?
They don't have control to get rid of the Electoral College, but they have control over saying that we want to allocate, for example, our electoral votes by congressional district. They have the power to do that.
And so, I mean, that would be a way to, I guess, moderate.
It could be better. My concern about that, though, is in a state like Texas, where the congressional districts are heavily gerrymandered, that would mean the Electoral College would also be heavily gerrymandered. So I think the problem is, if you're basing on the congressional districts, are those congressional districts drawn fairly or not?
You win the state by one vote, you get all 40 electoral votes. That's not
good. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it would probably be better, but I'm saying it would still be imperfect because of the influence of gerrymandering.
Sure. All right. I got to take this break, and I've got 5 seconds to tell you to hang on. We're going to do some pitching, and this is The Source. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation with Ari Berman. He is the voting rights reporter for Mother Jones. His new book is Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. We invite your phone calls, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Sherry. And Sherry, you're on the air. Hang on. Let's get you lit up here. I'm waiting. Okay, Sherry, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
All right. Well, go ahead.
Thank you. I live in Texas, and in addition to all of the wrongs, I believe there are involved with the Electoral College, ever since I first learned about it in government in high school, living in Texas, everyone believes that Texas is a red state and it's automatically going to go to Trump. And so my vote in the last couple of presidential elections has not counted because it went to the Electoral College, the candidate I did not vote for. And speaking to so many people lately, especially in this election, they're apathetic about voting, friends of mine that live in Texas, because they feel like their vote doesn't count. And I think that's a real concern with the Electoral College in getting people to go out and vote.
All right. Thank you so much for that point. I think that's really important. And so, Ari Berman, do you want to pick up on that?
It's an extremely important point that the caller made, which is that the Electoral College depresses voter turnout in the 85% of states that are not considered competitive swing states. And that doesn't just impact the presidential race. It impacts down ballot races as well, because it's hard to convince people to vote for Senate races or House races or local races if they feel like the most visible race on the ballot doesn't matter. So Texas actually has a fairly competitive Senate election this cycle. How many people are going to vote for that if they feel like their presidential vote doesn't matter? I have the same problem living in a blue state in New York. We also have low voter turnout in New York because even though New York has a lot of competitive U.S. House races, in fact, it has more competitive U.S. House races than any other state in the country, a lot of people feel like, oh, it's a safely blue state. Why does my vote matter? So even in more red states or more blue states, there are still competitive elections. And the problem is, at the national level, though, the fact that the Electoral College doesn't really impact these states means that people are less likely to vote for down ballot races as well. So that's another benefit of a direct popular vote election, is I think it will convince a lot more people that their votes matter. That will increase voter turnout nationally, and it will also increase turnout for these down ballot races that people often tend to ignore.
Now, allow me to push back and rant a little bit here. This forecast that Texas is automatically going to go one way or the other in the presidential race, that everyone knows it's going to be a Trump state, it's going to go red. I mean, I refuse to automatically buy into that. Trump is leading in some polling of the state. It seems like he's maybe 4 points ahead Kamala Harris in statewide polling. But I still think that's you know, I don't think that's a runaway guarantee of anything. So I think people should still go out there and vote the way they want to vote based upon how where they want the country to go, and just run with that.
That's absolutely true. But my point is that if it was a popular election, you wouldn't even have to make that argument, right? You would just be able to tell the huge number of people in Texas. What is the current population of the state right now?
I think it's like 2 or 3 people. It's a lot.
It's 50 million people. I mean, how many people? I'm going to Google it right now while I'm on the phone with you. But if you look at the, 30 million people live in Texas. So you wouldn't have to convince all of those people that their vote matters. And we wouldn't have to argue about whether it's a red or a blue state, right? Or a purple state. It may indeed be trending more purple, but the fact is you could say that regardless if you're a Democrat or Republican or independent, your vote really matters in Texas rather than the preconceived notions of how the state will go. Maybe Texas, in fact, if it was thought of as more of a battleground state, my guess is more people would choose to show up in the first place.
All right, another caller, Julie. And Julie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I grew up in Texas, and I've always been concerned about the electoral system since high school. And I believe every young person, as soon as they realize where their vote is going or not, are discouraged from voting. I'm a voter registrar, and I am 73 years old. The college kids, the young people just don't even want to register because they're convinced that their vote doesn't count. And there are a couple of states in the union, Maine, I think, and maybe Nebraska, that allot their electoral votes based on percentage, popular percentage. And why can't the government, why can't Congress pass a regulation, a federal law, and regulate that electoral college to address the unfairness of it?
All right. Oh, Julie, thank you for that great question. I appreciate it. And you're the best. I got to tell you, if you're out there getting people registered and helping out, I think you're awesome. Thank you so much for calling in. And so, Ari.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this earlier. It was a very good question by the caller. And again, I want to thank her for her work. But states could do that, and they don't need congressional authority to do that. States can determine how they apportion their electoral college votes, meaning that Texas could decide that it wants to apportion its votes by electoral district. Now, let's just say Texas became a blue state and there was a Republican-controlled legislature still in Texas. My guess is they would want to do that. But right now they don't want to do it because they feel like Texas is going to get a lot of electoral college votes for a Republican. But it's going to be really interesting when Texas becomes more purple, if it ever becomes blue. I think Republicans are going to look at the electoral college differently because Texas gives them so many electoral votes. But once it stops doing that, they're going to be in the opposite position in the electoral college. They're going to be in a disadvantage in the electoral college. So that is one way to change it. My worry, David, which we talked about earlier, is that it would be based on gerrymandered congressional districts, so it wouldn't be totally fair, but probably more fair than it is right now. And also, I would just want to add on to what the caller said about registration. One of my biggest problems with how Texas runs its elections is that Texas has no online voter registration. So in this day and age, when you can do virtually anything on your phone, you can't register to vote online in Texas. And Texas, partly because of that, has 3 million unregistered voters, which is larger than the population of about half the state in the country. I think if we had that one change in Texas, which is that you could register to vote online as opposed to having to go county by county and get deputized in 254 counties in the state to do a statewide voter registration drive, that would make a huge difference in the politics of the state.
Now, the caller, we have Amy, and Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, I was just going to say the same thing. I think Texas is a non-voting state. I'm not sure if we can tell if it's red or blue until people start voting.
All right, Amy, thank you for that. Well, my response is if people aren't voting, they're basically voting that they're fine with the way things are, Ari.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, or they're just so disaffected or not reached by the system in the first. So it's not so much that they're choosing not to vote, it's that they're, for some reason or other, disconnected from the political process. And to go back to voter registration in the state, if you look at the 3 million unregistered voters that Texas has, they're disproportionately much younger, they're disproportionately people of color, they're people that don't look like they're an iteration of the Texas legislature. And I think that is one reason why Texas has made it so difficult to register voters, because they don't want new people to be brought into the process, because they don't want the demographic shifts in the country to match the political power in the state. And so that is one of the real problems in Texas, that demographics and the politics are very much at odds. You have a state that is already a majority-minority state. It's a young, diverse state, but the legislature and the politicians are much whiter, more conservative, and more rural and Republican in the state as a whole. And I think part of that is because of how the laws are set up. So if Texas had online registration, if Texas had automatic registration, if Texas had laws that would create competitive elections at the local level, had less gerrymandering, if it mattered at the national level, if it wasn't perceived as a safe state in the Electoral College, then I think you'd start to see voter turnout increase in the state.
Abortion is on the ballot, a direct question about, you know, expanding abortion rights in 10 different states, but not in Texas on this election. In Texas, we do not have the ability to have a statewide referendum like in Ohio about anti-gerrymandering, which is one more reason why this state is considered to be less free than most other states. People have to recognize Texas doesn't celebrate or we don't have a lot of freedom here. And here's an example. And do you think that is also something that suppresses the vote?
Yes, absolutely. Because right now, if you support things like a women's right to choose, if you support sensible gun control laws, which has been a huge issue in the state because of all the tragic shootings, if you support doing something about climate change in a state that's a major contributor to climate change, you have no real way to affect policy if the legislature or the statewide leaders won't do it. Now, it's very hard to change the composition of the legislature because it's so gerrymandered, and so many of the elections actually happen in the Republican primary, which keeps pushing politics further and further to the right at the state legislative level. There have been some competitive statewide elections for Senate, for governor. There's a competitive Senate election this time.
Yeah.
But because the state is so big, because it's so expensive, it's hard for Democrats to break through on the statewide level. So at some point, the politics are going to shift in Texas. And I would argue they've already shifted a lot in the major urban areas.
If people go out and vote, that's what will happen. Okay, we got to take another break. This is a one-minute break, and we'll come right back. We'll keep talking about the vote, minority rule, and your ballot on The Source. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the vote, your vote, how secure it is, whether or not it will be counted or thrown out, or if you would be allowed to vote when you show up on election day. They'll say, "Oh, you're not on the list anymore. I don't know. Something happened there." Ari Berman is with us. He is the national voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones, and there are questions about these voting purges that have been going on around the country and in red states like Texas. What are you seeing, Ari?
Well, sometimes voters can be removed for very legitimate reasons, such as having died or having moved. When Greg Abbott said he had purged 1 million voters from the rolls, that was a lot of the reason why. There was nothing nefarious about it. But we've also seen faulty and inaccurate voter purges. You may remember back in 2019, the Texas Secretary of State said he had discovered more than 50, I think it was almost 90,000 people that he claimed were non-citizens that were on the Texas voting rolls. When people started looking at that list more closely, it turned out they were actually naturalized citizens who at one point had been non-citizens here legally and had become U.S. citizens. And so that purge would have removed many legitimate voters from the rolls. And there was an outcry, and the Texas Secretary of State, who was a Republican, was forced to resign. We've also seen, for example, the Attorney General in Texas go after Latino groups and Latino organizers in very aggressive ways. For example, police coming in at 6 a.m. with machine guns and knocking down the doors of an 87-year-old woman in South Texas.
They did not have machine guns.
They had guns. Okay. Yeah. Yes. They had guns. They had SWAT vests. It basically was like sending the SWAT team in.
Yeah.
And that seemed a little over the top, for an 87-year-old woman to have to deal with that. And so there have been things done in Texas that seem to be being done for political reasons and to have a chilling effect on certain kind of communities. And so
let me just pick up on that, because those raids that were conducted by the Attorney General's office was this allegation that there was vote harvesting going on, which sounds nefarious, but doesn't actually mean anything. And also this allegation that there's non-citizen voter registration going on. And it seems to be they're laying the groundwork so that if things don't go the way they want it to go, with the election, that they can start throwing out votes. And they have a lot more authority to do that under SB 1 to throw out votes than they've ever had before. I mean, are you concerned about that?
I am concerned about it. I'm concerned about the allegations of non-citizen voting, because every major study has shown that it doesn't exist. The Georgia Secretary of State, for example, did an audit there over 25 years didn't find a single instance of a non-citizen who had actually voted. Sometimes they accidentally end up on the registration rolls in small numbers, but it's never been proven that they voted in any significant way in American elections. It also doesn't make sense why someone would risk deportation to vote in an election when they are here to better their life. So I think voting is the last thing on many people's minds. When you hear things about migrants voting, I think that's probably the last thing they're concerned about right now. And then just in terms of the voter fraud investigation that Ken Paxton launched, there weren't a lot of details released. So it was hard to know what was actually the case. But the investigation was done in such an over-the-top way with those raids that it made it feel like it was being done, even if there was legitimate allegations, for that it was being done for political purposes. And also the law has changed in terms of how you can handle mail ballots as a result of SB1. So things that might have been legal are now illegal. But I think you're absolutely right, not just in Texas, but around the country. They are raising this issue of non-citizen voting. I think number one, to try to have this chilling effect in certain communities, but number two, to be used as a pretext to try to challenge the election results. I don't think that'll work because they're actually going to have to show evidence of fraud. But listen, Ken Paxton's already filed one lawsuit in 2020 to try to overturn the election results. I don't see why he wouldn't try to file another lawsuit if we have a similar situation play out in 2024, if Trump loses and contests the election again.
Yeah, and if that happens, Trump loses and they begin their machine to complain about it again. Do you think they'll go to the Supreme Court? They have a sympathetic Supreme Court. We saw that with the immunity ruling. Should we be concerned?
I think we should always be concerned, because when the Supreme Court says that the president has the power of a king, then you always worry about how sympathetic they'll be. They were not sympathetic to Trump's cause in 2020, so I think the details matter. If it's very clear and every major election official agrees that Trump lost the election, he's just trying to overturn it because he's a sore loser, which is how it was largely understood by the courts in 2020, then I don't think he'll be very successful. If it's more like a Bush v. Gore situation where there's legitimate disputes about the ballots, if, for example, the question is, should undated mail ballots be signed in Pennsylvania, which is more of a policy question than an overturning an election question, then I think it's very unclear how the Supreme Court would rule. And I also think it's unclear that the Supreme Court or other courts would stay out of the election. So the details matter a lot based on how close it is and also what the circumstances are in terms of what the courts might do. But I don't think we can just automatically assume that because they didn't get involved or they didn't rule Trump's way in 2020, that they'll necessarily do so again in 2024.
Ari Berman is the national voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones. He's the author of Minority Rule, the right-wing attack on the will of the people and the fight to resist it. Ari, thank you so much for talking to us today and helping us get through these tough times. Appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me back on the show. Really appreciate it, David.